Thank you. And in part, the idea of the topic of forgiveness came up because of it being Memorial Day, and somehow connected for me. The word for mindfulness in the Buddhist language of Pali is sati, and the word sati is very closely connected etymologically with the word for memory, to remember. And in a sense, the classic definition of mindfulness in Buddhism is very simple. It's simply the ability to hold something in your mind. That's why it's connected to memory. But to hold, so if you want to, for example, be mindful of your breath, you hold your attention on your breath. So it's kind of holding, collecting your attention, recollecting your attention on the breath. Often, people who do meditate or hear the meditation teachings get the message that Buddhism focuses a lot on the present moment and waking up and being present in the present moment. And so they think that somehow that the past is to be ignored or pushed away or let go of as quickly as you can so you can come back to the present. A friend of mine, not that I exactly agree, but a friend of mine came up with a little cliche, I suppose, or a little description. He said, he claimed, therapy has to do about attending to the past. Buddhism has to do with attending to the present. And coaches have to do about preparing you for the future. And but Buddhism as a spiritual tradition is much wider than just being in the present moment. And one of the things that happens for many people when they start meditating on a regular basis is they're trying to be in the present moment, and the practice of being in the present moment, of relaxing the kind of normal distractions, surface distractions of the mind, allows for the deeper unprocessed stuff of our life to pop up and show itself. And one of those things often is memories. And it's not so uncommon for people to sit in meditation and then to have some memory of something they've done from the past come up. And if they let go of it, then it might just come back up again and again until, if it's strong enough, something about that memory needs to be attended to and dealt with. And one example of this for so many people is realizing that you've hurt someone in the past and then feeling, you know, unable in some ways to continue in your meditation practice unless you somehow attend to this and take care of this. Many of you maybe heard the story John Travis tells of practicing in India in the 60s. And at some point, feeling somewhat maybe stuck in his practice, and he went to Ram Dass, who he knew in India back then. And Ram Dass gave him the instruction that he had to go back to Tennessee to see his father and to make it a quick trip. But he had to go back and kind of take care of business with his father so that he can continue his practice, because he was, at some point, the holding, the unresolved issues, the issues around his father were standing in the way of him continuing the process of opening up. So there's seemingly endearing stories of people remembering sometimes very small, seemingly insignificant thing they've done maybe 20, 30 years ago. And somehow it really nags at them. And when they're meditating, say, I really have to do something about this. I think I have to call that person up. And so after 30 years, you call this person up and says, you know, I really want to apologize for what I said to you. And they say, who are you? 30 years ago? Well, sometimes they remember, and sometimes they very much appreciate coming many years later with an apology. And it's not so much for that person's sake, but it's really maybe for your own sake, because to leave something unresolved and left with a sense of regret that's not taken care of, it becomes a hindrance after a while. It becomes this kind of energetic thing which keeps agitating the practice and makes it difficult to go further. There are other memories that might surface in the course of meditation, often the beginning years of someone's meditation practice. And sometimes they kind of fade away because they get taken care of after a while. But it's understood to be part of the purification practice that meditation practice involves. That part of what meditation practice is purifying us, ourselves, of all the accumulated holding patterns, all the ways in which we've shut down or held tight or clinging. It built up in our system, in our body, in our emotional life, in our hearts, in our minds. And for some people, there's a huge accumulation of tension that's held in the body from the holding patterns of a lifetime. And the process of meditation for them is in part learning to release these and giving space and letting them be released. If a person continues living their life the normal way, being very busy or active or lost in their surface concerns of their mind, they're not making any space in their psyche for this stuff to bubble up, and so it stays then repressed or hidden. But meditation practice makes it very difficult for repression to continue, because the normal mechanisms of holding things at bay are released, and then these things begin bubbling up. And at times it can be very uncomfortable, meditation practice, because of this purification process that goes on. But it's considered to be very healthy to do that. It's kind of like the analogy would be if you were going to put your very dirty clothes into your washing machine and you're going to wash your clothes, you put soap in the washing machine, and the washing machine kind of agitates, and after a while the water gets really brown from all the mud in your clothes. No one criticizes the water for being brown. They're just happy that the dirt's leaving their clothes. This stuff, mindfulness is like soap for our inner life. And as we kind of bring that soap to our life, all the stuff comes out. And the equivalent of the water in the washing machine for us is awareness. It comes out into awareness as it passes through. And then if you react to that and fight it or criticize it or push it back, then you're not letting that soap do its process. So part of meditation is learning to be patient, learning to be very accepting of whatever arises so that it can pass through you and kind of purify. And then you get the added benefit, which is a very important one, that at the same time you're actually also learning patience and acceptance. Many people who practice meditation think they're trying to learn how to be calm or centered or mindful or present for their experience. And maybe what you're really learning is how to be more patient and accepting of how difficult things are. There's not a lot of focus in Buddhism on forgiveness in the way that there is in maybe Christianity or Judaism. I'm not exactly sure why, but this is my theory, is that there's certainly Buddhism recognizes the importance of forgiveness when there's some kind of holding, when there's some kind of pain, some difficulty that's been arisen. And in fact, the monastic life, the monks or nuns are expected regularly to go ask for forgiveness. And every 2 weeks, there's a ritual of asking for forgiveness for transgressions you've done. Or once a year, there's a major ceremony of asking for forgiveness. So it's there to be done and recognized as being important. But the focus on, I think the focus for Buddhism is not so much dwelling on that, kind of takes care of that kind of matter-of-factly, it needs to be taken care of, but rather puts more focus, in my friend's point of view, like in the present moment, by helping us understand how better to deal with circumstances that arise in our life that lead us to have the kind of resentment and grudges that would require forgiveness. Forgiveness is somewhat a composite event. It's not like a single one little thing. It involves many different facets. It certainly involves being hurt, some kind of transgression. But to be able to forgive involves recognizing that hurt, but not holding on to it, not clinging to it. It involves some empathy for oneself or for other people. It involves, I would say, some feeling of goodwill toward the person that you're going to forgive. It isn't just simply kind of forgetting about it or kind of, you know, kind of being neutral about the person. But forgiveness is a kind of opening to a sense of goodwill, to see the humanity of that person and think well of the person again, to want well of that person. So one of the focuses in Buddhism then is not so much on the, you know, the valence or the emphasis tends to be less on talking a lot about forgiveness, and classically much more talking about forbearance, which is maybe not the right English word, good Victorian word. The word is kanti, and kanti sometimes is translated as patience or patient forbearing. Patience might be the best word, but it's it means the developing the capacity in difficulties of not getting angry, of not somehow contracting around the sense of hurt or the pain or the fear that might arise. So there's a lot of training, a lot of emphasis classically, you find in ancient texts, the teachings of the Buddha, a lot of stories about developing this kanti, this patience, and how you, when you find yourself in adversarial situations, that you should practice kanti, patience, or forbearance, or you just put, you practice this thing where you're not going to try to let your hurt flip over into anger. Now, it's not meant as a kind of necessarily as a negative kind of judgment about anger, but it's saying, look, if you can look very honestly at your hurt, or honestly what's really going on there, there might be a window for you not to choose to get angry in that circumstances. So there's lots of stories of this. There's a story of Shaka, who was a great king of the gods, who one day was insulted by the king of the Asuras. The Asuras and Devas are always fighting. And so the king of the Asuras insulted Shaka, the king of the gods. And he doesn't do anything. And the other kind of Devas in the court, I think this is not the very... They're kind of concerned. How could Shaka, you know, not defend himself or get, you know, do something, not get angry or attack back, or and so so then one of the courtiers, when the Deva said, when face to face with the king of the Asuras, is it from fear or weakness that you endure him so patiently, listening to his harsh words? Is it a sign of weakness that the fact that you don't do anything? Or fear, you're afraid of what the consequences would be? And Shaka says, it is neither through fear nor weakness that I am patient. How can a wise person like me engage in combat with a fool? And then the courtier says, fools would vent their anger even more if no one would keep them in check. This is a pretty good argument, right? It comes right back. You probably thought of that yourself. Hence, with drastic punishment, the wise person should restrain the fool. And Shaka says, I myself think this alone is the way to check the fool. When one knows one's foe is angry, one mindfully maintains one's peace. As someone said, that your enemy can hurt, can say all kinds of horrible things towards you. But if you really want to help your enemy and really get hurt, you have to help them by getting angry. I see this fault. So then the courtier goes on. I see this fault in practicing patient endurance. When the fool thinks of you thus, when the fool thinks like this, he will endure me out of fear. The dolt will chase you even more as a bull does one who flees. And Shakya says, let it be whether or not he thinks, he endures me out of fear. Of goals that culminate in one's own good, none is found better than patience. When a person endowed with strength patiently endures a weakling, they call that the supreme patience. The weakling must be patient always. They call that strength no strength at all, the strength that is a strength of folly. But no one can reproach a person who is strong because guarded by the Dharma. One who repays an angry person with anger thereby makes things worse for himself. Not repaying an angry person with anger, one wins a battle hard to win. This is nice now. He goes on to say, he practices for the welfare of both, his own and the others. When knowing that his foe is angry, he mindfully maintains his peace. That's a wonderful sense of kind of compassion or care or concern, or at least a very good point of view. That you also can turn, you also, your welfare of your opponent is kept in mind. Whenever he achieves the cure of both, his own and the others, the people who consider him a fool are unskilled in the Dharma. So that's an ancient argument for patient endurance. And there's lots of stories like this and lots of teachings about the importance of doing that. Much more on doing that than in forgiveness. Because if there's a need for forgiveness, if someone asks for forgiveness and you're not angry or resentful or feel hurt, but they ask for forgiveness because they've transgressed against you, then of course it's a nice thing to offer forgiveness. But to need to forgive because we're feeling resentful or held inside of us is a sign that we didn't practice patient endurance or patience or this peacefulness that Chakya was practicing. And a lot of the focus on Buddhist practice would be to kind of let's get back and really see the genesis, the point of beginning in the difficulties we have in life where we choose to get angry or resentful. And let's see if we can have a wiser choice in the situation. However, sometimes we find ourselves getting angry anyway or resentful. Forgiveness is a beautiful virtue, and beautiful virtues sometimes people overlook that they only forgiveness only makes sense if there is resentment or a grudge. So you need to have grudge and resentment in order to forgive. you can go tell someone, I'm a great forgiver, I'm really good at it. You know, I do it all the time. What you're telling them is, yeah, I'm really good at getting grudges. I get grudges all the time. So the focus on forgiveness from the point of view of Buddhist practice, there's a lot of points of ways of studying forgiveness and the need for it, but from the point of view of Buddhist practice, tends to be somewhat personal. That your own spiritual cultivation development is going to require the release of that grudge or that resentment. So you're doing it for yourself. And that can take some of the burden off feeling, oh, that person doesn't deserve my forgiveness. Well, it does not really matter whether the person deserves it or not. It's a matter of, can you be free of the own shackles that hold your own heart tight? Forgiveness, there was an interesting story I heard today about forgiveness from someone who had a very difficult time with her mother, a very tumultuous and painful relationship. And she carried a lot of anger towards her mother for many years. And then some years ago, her mother died. And she was there at the deathbed as her mother was dying. And she was surprised. And she'd been angry because her mother never apologized, and her mother never acknowledged the fact that she'd hurt her daughter so much. And she was there at the mother's deathbed. And she was surprised to find out that she had forgiven her mother. And it kind of points to one of the ways forgiveness works. It's not necessarily something we do always, though we can work at it. But sometimes it's something that's found. And sometimes it's found when conditions change. And one condition is the kind of empathy that arises when someone's dying or in great suffering. It's very hard then to kind of, we see the person in such a radically different way that the, you know, that of course we're going to forgive. Of course we're not going to see them in the old way or hold that grudge against them. So it was very interesting. So this person, she said that, you know, she was surprised to find out that she had forgiven her mother, no longer held the grudge or the resentment, the anger. And when that had lifted, then she noticed that what was next was that she had hurt her mother too, and that she needed to ask for forgiveness from her mother. And as long as she was stuck in her own pain, clinging to her own pain, and kind of always kind of these darts in her eyes towards her mother, she was unable or unwilling to see her responsibility, her part of it. And when she had been able to forgive her mother, then she saw her own part, and then she had to ask her mother for forgiveness. But her mother was in a coma. So I'm not sure how that played itself out. I think asking for forgiveness after someone's died, especially if you can go to the body, is still beneficial. So forgiveness. So the skills we learn in mindfulness practice, the skills of learning how to be present in a wise, accepting, patient, non-reactive way with our pain, our hurt, and our anger, is a very important step to learning how to forgive. Because without that kind of ability to be present for our own hurt and pain, with acceptance and patience, I think it's very hard to have the realistic kind of steps towards forgiveness. And also, without the development of the kind of mindfulness which allows you to be really present for someone else, that drops below our reactive filters of how we see the person. Many of us have ways in which we put people in categories. We have old memories and old hurts or old opinions about people that we carry with us. And we see them through those filters. Part of the function of mindfulness practice is to help relax those filters. And so we start seeing other people with less and less filters in front of our eyes. And we start seeing them much more directly. And that is the beginning of empathy. Also, empathy arises also when we see ourselves with less filters. And we see ourselves in a deeper and deeper way. And the greater depth, the greater self-forgiveness, the greater self-compassion, the greater sense of intimacy and knowing of yourself that we have, the greater stillness you can be with yourself, will translate directly into greater empathy for other people. Because it kind of empathy means being able to put yourself in other people's shoes. And if there's more of you to put in other people's shoes, you know, you'll see them much better. But if there's less of you to put in those shoes, it's not going to mean much to look at the other person. And then part of forgiveness then is to kind of maybe consider whether it's reasonable or important to practice forgiveness or try to have forgiveness. What are the benefits of it? What are the benefits of not doing it? What are the benefits of holding on to the anger? What's the benefit of holding on to the grudge or resentments? What are the benefits of trying to offer forgiveness? What is forgiveness? You know, and to explore these things, what does it mean for you? What are all the reservations you might have about, you know, is it safe to have to offer forgiveness? Is it okay? Does it mean I'm just going to have to forget what this person has done? Does it mean that means kind of condoning of what they've done? Forgiveness means neither forgetting nor condoning. It's certainly a lot easier to forgive someone if they have apologized and they've made it clear that they no longer stand behind what they did, that they feel that was really, you know, they're not going to do that anymore. Then it's a lot easier to forgive. But sometimes you can't do that. You can't get that from other people. And it doesn't make sense to forgive someone who hasn't apologized, who never will. I think these kinds of questions, some people have to grapple with in their own hearts as they do a meditation practice. Because sooner or later, if there's that kind of holding, those kinds of resentments somewhere in your heart, you're going to have to confront them directly. There's no spiritual bypass in Buddhism. Maybe temporarily there can be. But ultimately, as you do this purification process, it all has to come out. And so learning how to be present for and being willing to and learning the skills to do it and grapple this question of forgiveness is a very important issue for many people. So offering forgiveness and also asking for forgiveness. There's a beautiful section of the Vinaya, the monastic rules for the monks and nuns, which talks about reconciliation and forgiveness. And it says if you need to go ask for forgiveness from someone, it recommends you use these words. You go to the person and say, well, I should get it right. Forgive me. I am at peace towards you. Forgive me, I am at peace towards you. So those are kind of the ways. So you come and saying, now I'm at peace with you. I have no enmity in my heart towards you, or hatred, or resentment, or anger. But you know, now I'm at peace with you, and please forgive me. I like to think of forgiveness as being a personal matter. It's really something you do for yourself. The interpersonal aspect, from a Buddhist point of view, I would call reconciliation. And reconciliation has, and part of asking for forgiveness is part of the reconciliation part, both parts are necessary. But maybe to distinguish the two of them is useful because there's a whole complex of things connected to forgiveness and a different bunch of skills and understandings and emotions connected with reconciliation. Nick?
Could you clarify the difference between forgiveness and compassion? It seems to me a lot of what you're saying is just a subset of compassion. Is there any way you can contrast them? Is there any difference?
Yeah, I think there's a difference. Compassion is from a Buddhist point, empathy, which is closely connected to compassion. Empathy is feeling the suffering of someone else, sensing or feeling or intuiting, being present for someone else's suffering. It's kind of like it's your own almost, perhaps, or somehow. And compassion is empathy plus the desire for that person's betterment, that suffering come to an end. So compassion involves feeling the suffering, it's kind of shaking, quivering of the heart in connection to that person's suffering and wanting that suffering to be alleviated. So empathy and compassion. Forgiveness, there can be a lot of compassion without, you know, with forgiveness is not an issue at all because, it's not a matter of anybody being hurt. I mean, someone's sick in the hospital and you feel compassion for them. But in order, part of the process for allowing for forgiveness, a healthy process, one of the elements, I think, is this thing of empathy. If you can really see the other person as a human being, not through the filters of your anger, then it's a lot easier to want to forgive them, a lot easier to want to offer forgiveness, ask for forgiveness, the whole thing. You know. So I think empathy is a very useful thing. And I think when people do forgiveness trainings, like in the world of psychotherapy, I believe one of the things they're training people to do is to develop empathy for the other person.
In the forgiveness, then, the focus is on a particular transgression or hurt that someone is to be forgiven for?
Yeah, usually.
That sounds clear. Thank you.
Other comments or questions?
Could you talk a little bit about the idea of helplessness and compassion, how does that hurt?
Helplessness and compassion is the theme of the weekend for me. It's the theme of the weekend for me. Lots of compassion, but I felt helpless to help someone.
Yeah. So I've heard that that's sort of like, almost like the near cause of compassion, is a sense of helplessness. You know, you see someone suffering and you feel sort of helpless, and that sort of causes the quivering in the heart.
Oh, I've never heard that. Maybe I think about that, but I think until you brought this up, I would have thought that compassion just arises out of being in the presence of someone else's suffering and wanting to do something about it. And sometimes you can; it's really easy.
Yeah, I just heard that it also what's involved is a sense of helplessness.
Oh, yeah, I know. I have to think about that. Yes.
I find that the experience of having the experience of the person I was angry with has been helpful to me to develop empathy for them. Like a lot of guys, I've carried around a lot of that resentment toward my father for many years, and then when I found that I was living a life like his as a father of a boy and self-employed and living those similar things, the lifestyle that he had, I found all of a sudden my empathy for him, my forgiveness just swelled up. It's like, oh boy, now I know what his life was like in some ways, only because I've experienced vicariously some of it. So it's been real nice in that sense to have that. I didn't plan to go out and, you know, do this to get empathy from my father.
I wonder sometimes whether part of the reason they want grandchildren is. So they can so they can be better understood. Yes.
In forgiving someone that has placed you in a very traumatic situation for many years, you it seems that you don't realize the trauma that you've been in, and you hold a sort of an unknown resentment, anger toward that person, and you may not even know the underlying cause. And it's only really when you understand in that the treatment that you were put under was a very abusive treatment, then it seems as that you can only then at that time forgive someone. Until you can understand what happened to you, it's very, very hard to find forgiveness. You can say it 1,000 times in your head, but it doesn't work.
Yeah, I agree. Yes.
I've heard sympathy, empathy, and apathy expressed in certain body positions. I hope I get this right, that sympathy is leaning towards the person, empathy is being centered, and apathy is leaning back. What do you think of that? Does that square with the Buddhist thought?
Well, I like the emphasis on the body posture, because so much gets expressed through our body, and so you know, a body is often a great window into how we're feeling and what's going on, our reactions, our intentions, our motivations. So that's really great. Apathy, I think, is just kind of disinterest, isn't it? Kind of not disinterest in suffering. Pathy, like passion, suffering, right? Not suffering, apathy. Sympathy with suffering with, and empathy is. I don't know. M. What is M? And
taking on.
And I think there can be a healthy sense of kind of interest in someone. We lean forward and kind of really get to know them, really see them. But sometimes leaning towards people, you know, can be a little bit had a little bit of attachment connected to it, or a little bit overly concerned. One of the things that's talked about in Buddhism is the importance of combining or balancing compassion with equanimity. And equanimity is this balance, kind of where you're just upright and you're fully there, compassionate for them, but there's no going towards or going away from. And I guess apathy, you know, so, I mean, pulling away, I don't think of apathy. I think of apathy, I think pulling away is kind of aversion. You know. Whereas apathy is just like completely indifference. So. Yes?
I work with at-risk teenagers, and one of the challenges with forgiveness is if they're currently in an abusive relationship with their parents, it's psychologists counsel that it's not good to work on forgiveness because it perpetuates their ability or their propensity to accept the abuse and not to defend themselves.
Yeah, well, that's a very good point. It's considered very dangerous to be too quick at forgiving. You know, just to do it too quickly or too, you know, simply because it can be kind of denial or kind of our own feelings, what's going on inside of us and all that. And certainly it's been said that forgiveness is not very useful to do while the person's still beating you up. You know, I forgive you. However, in a situation like that, rather than teaching people forgiveness when the abuse is still current, is maybe the various skills connected to patience. Patient endurance is what's really called for here. It's for them to understand how they're reacting towards that, how they create anger and resentment. So rather than dealing with resentment which is there, you deal with how when they go back home the next day and someone yells at them, how not to take that on. Like Shakya didn't take it on.
During the initial exercise you had us do while we were still in meditation, we were supposed to call to mind a person who may have injured me, for instance, and look for forgiveness. And I did this and I don't find it there. And honestly, then I go, well, I can realize what I know about it and recognize the other person has a side of the situation as well. And is that about as far as I can go at this point? Call it to mind again. What to do?
I think forgiveness only is needed if there's resentment or a sense of grudge. So some people can be injured in some ways, someone has transgressed in some ways, but the person who's been transgressed against doesn't take it on as a grudge, doesn't get angry because of that. I mean, they still have to deal with the problem and they have to kind of deal the best they can, but they haven't taken on internally. They're not frozen some way in their hearts. And so there's no need for forgiveness unless they ask for it because they realize they've done something. But, you know, for your sake, there may be no need for it. Or it's possible that in the situation you described is that no forgiveness comes because there's no sense of really understanding or sensing or feeling the level of pain or resentment or anger that's really there. Some people become numb to all that. And so the word forgiveness, it makes no sense because they're kind of hit, that the dimension of who they are is kind of hidden to themselves. It might be. I mean, sometimes things go away through time. It's possible. That does happen. And I remember I was some years, 10 years ago or so, there was a housemate I had who I was angry with. And at some point, I became neutral towards her. But being neutral was not forgiving. It just, you know, because what it was, I didn't have any sense of goodwill, but I wasn't holding any ill will towards her, but there was no goodwill towards her. It's kind of neutral. And I ran into her some time ago, a while ago, and I was really pleased to see that the goodwill was back within me. So it was just time. Time took care of that on its own. So sometimes time takes care of the old injuries, and no longer holding. Sometimes. The level of hurt, the sense of hurt, the sense of anger, whatever, can be so deeply buried inside of us because maybe we feel it's unacceptable to be angry. I can't be angry against that person, you know, so, or that category of people. So you know, it gets buried deep inside. So then, say, to forgive, you know, there's no material to use for forgiveness. And so then it's just a matter of practicing, and the mindfulness practice, as it unfolds, whatever needs to come up to the surface and be dealt with will eventually show itself.
I can see that this is a case, it was an old injury, and I was very, very angry about this at the time. But now it's a very long time. Years have passed, and it kind of occurred to me if I mean, this is sort of like, there's no way it's physically affecting me now. And if I would just quit holding on to the fact that I was hurt a long time ago, maybe there would be no need to talk about forgiveness, because the injury's gone.
Well, yeah, the injury is still there if you're hurt. If you're still holding on to your hurt.
Yeah, but if I just quit holding on, it's fine.
Yeah, then you're forgiven. So it's very interesting, you know, how part of what happens in mindfulness practice is our whole sense of self-identity shifts also. How we identify, how we see ourselves, and some people see themselves through the filter of their hurt, how they've been hurt. Like, you know, we still nowadays we talk about people who've attached to being the victim, for example. And it's very hard, if you do mindfulness practice seriously, it's very hard to hold on to being the victim because it involves a holding. You know, all holding has to be released. Someone said, the cost of freedom is forgiveness. Yeah. This is the last question or comment, then we'll stop.
You really wanted to hear from your mother or your father or your whatever, it does help because it verbalizes where the need is, and you go ahead and then you say, well, my need for that. And I think that's one step further back. It's very helpful for me.
Beautiful. Very nice. So, thank you. And I ask for forgiveness for whatever problems this talk invoked, or the guided meditation, and I was hoping to get a little bit of reports from you what it was like to do that guided meditation, and if any of you want to just tell me before you leave tonight, because it's nice to get some feedback when I do things like this, and for those of you who don't like guided meditations, I ask for forgiveness.